Check 1 2 1 2, bitch. What up, people?
What up?
This is episode 294 of the most kind of consistent podcast in the area.
Give me a hell yeah.
The logical sense. This is your boy Buzzby.
And over at your boy JC No Hunheads.
And life. Life keeps on happening for both of us in a good way.
Man, life don't keep happening. I got COVID. That ain't life. What the fuck are you talking about? Life keeps happening.
I was trying to be optimistic and shit.
That was not optimistic. No, life did not keep happening. We attempted to record Monday, that Monday, but for whatever reason, it just didn't come together. And by Tuesday, I was fully succumbed to symptoms.
Symptoms. Like how you said, yeah. Symptoms.
Yeah, fully succumbed to all kinds of symptoms. The worst part of it was I think I got, I'm pretty sure that I was, what's the term? Exposed that Friday going into Easter. And so, I started feeling, if I had to chronicalize, I started feeling fatigued on Monday, but I thought I was just tired because of the weekend. Before, and then Tuesday came in and I came home right before the Lakers playing game, and I was like, I need to take a nap. I'm not really feeling too hot. So I told Britt I was going to bed, woke up. Lakers made me sick during the playing game, but they pulled it out. So I just thought they made me sick. And then I woke up at 3 a.m, full fledged sweat, hot fever. And I was like, I need to take a home test. And I took one and it said positive, and I immediately made a refuge in the living room because I had to get away from Britt and the baby. You have no idea how hard that is. You have no idea how hard that is to try to find refuge on the couch in a two bedroom apartment with the bedroom right next to the living room. It's the hardest thing ever to do. And then on top of that, so that was Wednesday. By Friday, this isn't hyperbole. Like, I'm not trying to make this as a joke, but on Friday, I legitimately thought I was going to die. My throat caved in. I felt like my throat had caved in. And when I could swallow, it felt like I was swallowing glass. So I thought I was done. So Britt got me into the car, got me into the emergency room. They were able to get me back on track. They gave me the medication needed to fight off COVID. I'm mixing that with NyQuil and DayQuil. And by that Sunday or Monday, I was starting to feel okay enough to, you know, just like, okay, this is normal sickness type feeling. Mm-hmm. And then by Wednesday, I took an in-home COVID test because I couldn't get an appointment for the official until Friday, so I'd give to work. But I took an in-home this previous Wednesday, and that joint said negative.
Round of applause for that.
So I survived COVID. And then immediately we took off and went to Half Moon Bay so we could have a baby moon, which it's similar to a honeymoon where you go away after the wedding. This one is a baby moon, is you get together for one last getaway before the baby arrives.
Okay.
So we did that, had nice waves next to our room. Got to hear that all day and all night. That was refreshing. Mm. And yeah, came back and pretty much came back changed, man. I had to come back and start putting furniture together because at this point in time, I think this might be the final episode where we do this without an illogical child in the room. I think they're going to be here by next week.
An illogical child coming into this illogical world. Hey, man, you almost there. You're pretty much at the, what's it called, finish line, pretty much.
We're so you got to start striding. Now.
Yeah, we're in the end game now. Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, I'm happy you're still here. I can tell you that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, actually, me too. I was a thought process going to the emergency room. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to leave a fatherless child.
You are leaving a child.
Yeah. I was like, damn.
Yeah.
God really does have a sense of humor. I'm able to have my dark humor now, but
you laugh now. It. But back then, it wasn't funny. Shit wasn't funny then.
Yeah, I can laugh now, but I was crying earlier.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, speaking of that, yuck, I was listening to that for like I've been going on a whole Pusha T binge ever since Jim Jones has started talking shit about Pusha T for whatever reason.
Yeah, I was in the middle. I was in the middle of dying, so I don't know what's going on with that.
Oh, so let me update you for a bit. So. Pretty much what happened is that Jim Jones was on, I forgot that Spotify podcast, Rap Caviar, and they were talking about the top 50 MCs. And for whatever reason, he said that Pusha T is not considered a top 50 MC. He feels Big Sean is better. Drake is considered one of the GOATs. And he kept saying that Pusha T is just not a top 50 MC at all. No one listens to him in the club and all that other shit, right? So everyone's like, what the fuck? So then he goes on Breakfast Club. And he doubles down on it. And he keeps doubling down, saying that Pusha is not a top 50 MC. And then he asked Charlamagne, how many Pusha T, could you name 5 Pusha T records? And Charlamagne was like, yeah. And then he changed the subject. Not changed the subject, but he went to the next question. You know,
and that was funny because okay, that makes sense now because somebody wrote on Twitter, they said Jim Jones can't even name 5 Jim Jones songs.
Yeah. And I'm going like, and people are saying the reason why Jim Jones is doing all this is because he's being loyal to Drake because Drake brought his ass out during the Apollo fucking show and he brought Dipset out. So he might be like doubling down saying that Drake's the GOAT and Pusha T's like not top 50. I don't know. I just know Pusha's going to hurt that man's feelings because you know what's coming.
Well, you notice, you also know that Cam ain't said nothing because Cam too busy with Mace on It Is What It Is. And Cam was also featured on the Popeyes record, so.
Okay. So, like I said, Pusha's doing that Gangsta Grills with DJ Drama. So, it's going to come, and when it does come, he's going to hurt that man's feelings. And you know what's coming.
More than likely.
Yeah. Yeah. But what hurt my feelings? The ending to Snowfall.
And I've been waiting, baby.
Round of applause for that series, by the way. Rest in peace, John Singleton. Round of applause for everybody, actors, the crew, all that shit.
Yeah, I really jumped the gun going into that episode, that third episode, or after the third episode. Yeah, boy, did they exceeded my expectations.
Yeah.
Snowfall will definitely go down as an all-timer. I'm not ready to start ranking it because it just ended. I don't like ranking stuff right away. In addition to that, the shows that I hold in high regard also have one up on Snowfall, which is the fact that it's on premium cable, so there's no commercials. So I also factored that in. But at the same time, Snowfall has definitely made its way, if not in all households, and within black and brown households for sure.
And this is by far the most divisive ending for a series that I've ever encountered.
Right, which now leads us to the question, did you like the ending?
Loved it. Like, for me personally, this is... It was. I thought about this ending for 2 days straight. Like when it ended, I just sat there in silence. Like this fucked me up. Like even when the credits came on, I was just sitting there because you heard Kendrick's Pride playing, and I'm like, "Wow, that's how it ends." And then I'm just sitting there, almost reduced to tears. Like this is fucked up. And then like 2 days later, I'm still sitting thinking. I woke up thinking about it, went to work thinking about it. Then like 2 days later, I'm still thinking about it. I never had that happen for a show before. You know what I mean?
Oh, let me paint a picture for you on my end. So we're in the hotel, right? I'm hearing waves and it's sounding nice. The Lakers blow an opportunity to beat the Grizzlies because Ja Morant's out and they lose by damn near 20. So I'm pissed off already. All right.
Okay.
Britt decides to go to sleep, and I'm like, okay, that's cool. So now I can, you know, I'll go into the living room area and I'll watch Snowfall. I watch it, and I'm like, now I gotta go to sleep sad. Like, damn, man. Lakers lost, and now Franklin lost on the street. Damn.
Damn.
I thought the ending was... extremely tragic and poetic at the same time. I thought that it was very in line with The Godfather 2. In terms of Michael Corleone striving to do everything to protect his family, and in the end being the lone family member left, like, he's all alone. He can't trust anybody. He's, you know, he may have won the war, but he may have won the battles, but in terms of the internal conflict of war, he completely lost. He's by himself.
Mm-hmm.
I got that same vibe with Franklin Saint. We saw a character legitimately make the rags to riches claim. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, his greed is what caused him to be alone.
Yeah. And literally, that was the first thing said in the first episode. It said, don't let greed, I'm paraphrasing. He said, don't let greed consume you, because then that's your weakness. They found you weakness if you let greed consume you. Right. And it was so fucked up. I just sat back and I'm like, I can't rewatch this series knowing what's going to happen. But now that I've kind of sat on it, I might go back and rewatch it, because I saw this YouTube clip, this YouTube on FX I posted 5 months ago, right before the last season aired, pretty much saying it was titled The Rise and Fall of Franklin Saint.
I watched that when it came out.
Yeah, they literally spelled it out for everyone, letting people know this is not going to end well for Franklin. Right. Now, I didn't expect this type of ending, because it was like after episode 9, you know, after when Teddy got shot and Sissy went to jail and shit like that, I'm like, okay, where can they go with this? Because I'm like,
hold up, hang on, time out. We're not going to gloss over. We're not going to gloss over arguably the funniest, the most unintentionally funniest part of this entire series.
Okay, I know.
So everybody's seen this now, so I don't need to go into detail, but the fact that they go to this drop and Sissy still has it in her head, thinking that Teddy was telling the truth and that Alton was still alive. So she goes up to him and says, where is he? And he goes, huh? Which prison is he in? Bitch, have you lost your fucking mind? I shot that motherfucker twice in the head, dead, blood everywhere. Hey, Anne, how you doing?
He just had that look on his face. He was like, what? No, I shot him twice and dumped his body. Hello? That part. Hello? It's like when your mom cusses you out.
If that ain't the epitome of code switching I have ever seen. A white man did the code switching. Bitch, I'd have killed your motherfucking husband. Two in the head. Pow, pow. Bury the body. Hey, Ann. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Ann. How you doing?
I paused that at the time of watching, and I laughed for 2 minutes straight before I even hit play. I said, she's going to kill this motherfucker, but I kept laughing the entire time.
Oh, man. Now, that ending for episode 9, when she shot him, at first I was in total shock because I knew it was going to happen, but it was just like how it happened. I was like, oh, my God, the money. Oh, my God. But then...
Franklin, dumbass, this is what greed does to you. Greed makes you believe that you are superior and almighty. This man out here having his final breath, and he's like, no, he got the number. He got it. Come on, Teddy.
Tell the code. And then the other CIA dude just went like, ain't my problem. He walked away.
The motherfucker walked out and said, damn, I got to get this KGB motherfucker by myself now.
You feel me? Like, say the code. And then you see Sissy just with her hands in the air. She just looked at Franklin, which were her last words to him that she ever said to him was, goodbye, Franklin. And that was the last thing she ever said to him, because in the last episode, in the series finale, she didn't say one word to Franklin. Even when he went to visit her, she did not say one word. And that should hurt me too.
So now that brings me to my next question. Was it ego, narcissism, or pride that took Franklin down?
Could it be like all of the above?
Well, I'm gonna tell you why it's pride. So ego is defined as an inflated feeling of pride in your superiority to others. Mm-hmm. Franklin did feel superior, but that wasn't where his basis was.
Okay.
Narcissism is a self-centered personality style characterized as having an excessive preoccupation with oneself and one's own needs, often at the expense of others. Now, that does fit Franklin.
Oh, it does.
Because he used everybody in his family to ultimately get what he wanted and ultimately lose it. But what happens with pride is it's defined as a feeling of deep pleasure or satisfaction derived from one's own achievements, the achievements of those with whom one is closely associated, or from qualities or possessions that are widely admired.
Damn.
So he was a narcissist that allowed his pride to take him down.
Yeah. And when I watched that fucking The Rise and Fall of Franklin on the YouTube, it literally spelled out everything throughout the entire series. And I'm like, oh, so the network and even the creators, they spelled this out for you. Franklin was going to go down. He was not going to ride off into the sunset. Now this goes to the how divisive the ending was. Because on one side, me and JC, we love the ending. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the other side of people that hate the ending, that are literally blaming CeCe and Leon for everything. They say they felt that...
There is powerful niggardry at work here.
They blamed them for Franklin's downfall.
Yeah.
I've done... And it's just like, did you watch the same series that I watched? Like, did you just...
I saw a think piece go as far as to say that this ending was not only unrealistic, but it's very anti-heterosexual black men and masculinity.
What? Are you serious?
Yes.
What kind of shit is that?
Deadass serious.
Did we watch the same series?
Like, I mean, I know what I watch. I don't care what other people interpreted. This is what happens when you allow music, TV, movies, and video games to dictate to you how the drug game works.
I mean, I was seeing shit. I was seeing motherfuckers say this was bad writing. I was like, bad writing. Are you serious?
Oh, Snowfall has had bad writing throughout the series. Yeah, of course. Don't get me wrong. It had bad writing throughout the series, but this wasn't, the ending was far from bad writing. It was real.
Everything went full circle, sadly. He, like, frankly, literally became his father. Because his father was in the very first episode as a homeless drunk, just like what Franklin became.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, man. And just everything about that last scene when he told only person who survived, which I was literally shocked, was Leon. I thought Leon was going to die, to be honest.
No, he wasn't the only one.
I mean, out of Franklin's crew, you know what I mean? I thought Leon was going to die. Yeah, I was like,
I'll get to that, because there's a lot of intangible evidence to show why that was. But in terms of Franklin himself, I saw a lot of people saying, yeah, they blame Leon, they blame Louis, they blame CeCe. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that Franklin showed that he was unredeemable long before he even killed the locksmith. Franklin became unredeemable in season two when he killed Kevin.
Mm-hmm. He was unredeemable after season one, in my opinion.
No. I'm gonna tell you why. Season two, when he killed Kevin, he didn't kill Kevin. He killed Kevin because he chose his empire material over love and loyalty.
Yeah, he did.
That was when he became unredeemable.
And then people actually still sided with Franklin. Did they think he was gonna go out like Scarface or something?
Yeah, like, that's something that's important to recognize in the ending. His family, they all wanted out throughout the series.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Jerome, he wanted to sell sound systems. CeCe kept telling Franklin to cash in on the real estate and get out. And mm-hmm. Leon in season four, he showed that he was at odds with Franklin. So he told Franklin that he lost himself to greed of money because he didn't like the fact that they had to work with Oso, because he blamed Oso's as responsible for the death of Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
So then he cuts ties with him. Then he goes on and, you know, he shoots Khadijah and Scully's daughter, right?
Yeah.
So then after Khadijah dies, he goes back to Franklin. He says, I'm done. I want out. And what does Franklin tell him? I need you where I need you. You're not leaving. You're not going anywhere. So yeah, this entire time, like, people are blaming everybody, but throughout the series, they wanted out. It was Franklin that kept them in the game.
Franklin did not allow them to leave. Franklin did not allow them to leave at all.
Which is now important. Which now, as you say that, this is why it's important to recognize everybody's fates. Every elder that Franklin genuinely loved received an ending that the audience wanted for Franklin. Sissy got life in prison. Franklin should have got life in prison. Jerome's dead. He should have been dead. Louis, her life is on the run. So yes, she was she technically escaped, but she didn't escape on her terms. She's on the run for the rest of her life. Okay. Leon got the happy ending because Leon physically left LA with his soul intact. He went to Ghana.
Yep.
Wanda's still alive because Wanda's still alive because she went to Ghana. Melody is still alive because Melody left for Texas. Also got away because here is how it works. Everybody that left the hell that Franklin created got out. But everybody that stayed in the hell that Franklin created, they stayed in their hell. Louis technically got out, but Louis didn't leave on her own terms. She was forced out. So she, in turn, is still a part of that hell.
Yeah.
So that's why Leon was able to get away. He physically left the hell with his soul intact. He still remembered who he was.
If you notice, he was kind of looking like Uncle Jerome too, with his goatee and shit like that. He was kind of even walking like him too,
right?
But and then he still had hope for Franklin. He was still trying to save him. That was the heartbreaking part in the end, when he was still trying to save Franklin. Even when they went to the liquor store, the same liquor store that Franklin worked at in the very first episode. And he went and Franklin and he just told him, like, hey man, we gotta help the youth and all this other shit. And all Franklin did, hey, you got $10? And he just gave him $20. And I was just like, fuck, man. And man. And the only person that fucking Sissy talked to in the last episode was Leon, and she said that Franklin was my greatest failure, but you are my greatest mistake. And I love you.
No. She said that Franklin was her greatest tragedy and Leon was her greatest surprise.
Surprise, yes. Yes. And then after that, Franklin told him that I am proud of you. You are my best friend and I'm proud of you.
Which is too little too late, because he had all the opportunities to tell him that he was proud of him, but he kept holding rank over him. Mm-hmm. And that was another thing too, was as he was going mad throughout the finale, you could tell that he genuinely did not love his people in that moment. They were chess pieces on a board to him to ultimately get what he wanted. He prioritized the money over everybody. It wasn't about, because here's the thing too, I realized in, somebody made a good, they pieced things together where they showed the two of them and Kevin going down that same street in season one. And they play Pride. They play Pride, the beginning of Pride there, and then it flowed through with the final scene. What I noticed in that was that if it was really about love and loyalty, Franklin would have died or gone to jail.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was about the greed. So as a result, he is legitimately a dead man walking. Because he sold his soul. So he has no soul. He prioritized. The last two seasons, I never even thought that he was excited to become a father. He didn't really acknowledge that portion of his life that was coming.
It was in the back of his mind, pretty much. The way he was written and how his character was, it was always in the back of his mind, him being a father. It was always just about the business and about his money and trying to get what he wanted. He was trying to set everything up and then he'll become a father. You know what I mean?
But in turn of that, because, and I'm speaking as somebody who was about to become a father, because he didn't put this at the forefront, he allowed himself to treat Veronique in ways that he shouldn't have even thought about treating her. I mean, yes, everybody knows that I saw a lot of people blaming her too, like, oh, she ran off with the money. And it was, well, remember when he first notified her of what Sissy did, her response was, come back here. Let's fix this. Let's do this together. We can find a way to get out. So she didn't leave him. She gave opportunities to come back and say, and what was his first response? His first response was to go back to the bar and he consumed his first cup of alcohol.
Drink. Ever. His first drink. Yeah, ever.
So then he turns, so he was already a monster, but then the alcohol really brings it out of him. And then he puts his hands on her. And that's when she realized what her mom said, which was always have a backup plan. And that's when she saw she looked in his eyes and realized he has no soul. I got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm. So it took all the money. It took the what was left of the money and just disappeared.
Right.
With the baby.
So, and again, so from that aspect, no, Franklin, he is reaping what he sowed. He created an environment where it wasn't about love. It was all about the material possession, which was money. I'm still one of those people where I don't say money is the root of all evil. It's the lust for more. Mm-hmm. This just happened to be money, because if it wasn't money, if they said this in 2023 and they said crypto, well, it's crypto. If it was about gold, it would have been about gold. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the lust of power and the lust for more.
And wanting more. And it just fucked me up. This thing, like, seeing what Franklin became in the end, it fucked me up. Because I've watched, what's it called? Snowfall, I guess you could say, since the beginning. And
I watched it from the beginning.
I think I'm trying to find out when I watched it, but you know, I watched it since its early beginnings and shit like that. And it just seeing just what Franklin was, how he always stood tall. He talked smart. He was always just like the leader and shit. Even when you watch Hulu and it says, oh, watch Snowfall streaming, you see Franklin standing tall like a fucking black superhero damn near. Right. And then in the end, you see him looking like a damn bum walking down the street. I'm like, what the fuck, man? Like, it just,
well, he wasn't looking like a bum.
He was a bum.
Yeah.
Like, he was a bum. And then that's how it ended. And then seeing how people just don't understand that concept, but they said it was unbelievable that Franklin was so smart. He was so this. And then I'm like, dude, have you ever met a homeless dude or a bum that said that, oh yeah, I used to do this back in the day. I used to be like this and be like that and da 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 da. And you never believed them? Yeah, this is 100% believable.
Yeah, because they brought up the good point even then. They said, well, Franklin, he's so far gone. Who is going to believe him that he smuggled cocaine in on behalf of the CIA? Who's going to believe mm-hmm. that?
And that's why the CIA stopped following him, because they knew, yeah, he's done. He's just a bum now. And, man, them crackers. You know?
Yeah.
And honestly, this ending fucked with me more than like all of them. Like, with The Sopranos, when it ended, like, it was so abrupt. I said this on Twitter. The Sopranos ending, it was so abrupt, but the feeling of having no closure for the entire like family and shit, like, there was closure, but not really. It was very intriguing. You know what I mean?
No. Sopranos wasn't abrupt. Here's what you binged the Sopranos.
No, I'm talking about when it happened. Like, I'm talking.
What I'm saying is the same effect happened here through the Sopranos. That's why Sopranos season 6 is two parts. Everybody saw in part A what could potentially be, mm-hmm. and part B was him doubling down into pretty much the demon inside of him and moving forward. So it wasn't abrupt. We saw what took place. I didn't watch it in live time, but that's also one of the reasons why I allow myself to watch like 2 or 3 episodes a day, because you got to give it time to breathe to have that feeling. When you binge it all at once, it does feel abrupt. But if you got to remember, these series also, they had weeks in between.
Mm-hmm.
So people had time to sit with them.
I think with the ending with Sopranos, it was more of a mystique thing. Like, there's like, it's like a mystique over the ending. Like, what happened? But we don't know. I mean, you do know, but you don't know. You know, so that's the mystique of it. With Breaking Bad and The Wire, those had like, in a way, definitive endings. It was like satisfying endings, like, you know, Walter White bleeding out and he became like a kingpin martyr. He went out on his own terms. And I'm like, okay, I'm good with that. The end of The Wire, everybody's stories got kind of wrapped up, but they're still kind of open ended. But it's like a good like ending mark for the show. You know what I mean? It was like mm-hmm. a satisfying ending. Like, you're satisfied with that, right? This shit, it just, the ending of Snowfall just hit so different for me because it felt personal.
I disagree. Okay. You were satisfied with seeing Dookie go to that damn house and start hitting that heroin?
When I say satisfying, I mean it was an ending that was like, damn, but you weren't really fucked up about it in the end. Like, you didn't really, you thought about it, but it was like, damn, that's fucked up. Well, okay, I can understand that. When it wrapped up everybody's characters, I was kind of like, damn, that's fucked up. But you were just like, okay, Dookie's the new Bubbles. Okay, Chris is the new Omar. Okay, so everything is just going full circle again. Okay. It sucks, but I'm like, that's the city of Baltimore. Like, I was comfortable with that ending.
Michael was a new Omar.
Chris was in jail. Yeah, Chris was in jail, my fault. But I thought Chris died.
No, Chris did like 17 life sentences, same way we did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, true. But I'm just saying that ending to The Wire, that was an ending that didn't leave me fucked up, is what I'm trying to say. I'm like, okay, I get that ending. This ending to Snowfall just fucked me up because it felt personal. It felt personal because we literally saw him from the beginning, and it was just like, it's literally the rise and fall. Literally the rise and fall of Franklin Saint.
I get that from the aspect. It did fuck me up, but not to the point where it was... Again, when I was able to think about Godfather 2, I was like, nah, this isn't far-fetched. Like, it's not what you're used to seeing, but this isn't far-fetched. Like, I get it.
Just seeing what people were saying, like seeing how some people were just so upset about that ending, about what happened to Franklin. That's wild to me. I'm like, wow, did you guys did not watch the same series, or you guys really just wanted him to win? Like, did you really think he was going to escape all this?
Yeah, they really did. They did.
I guess, man. You black and you doing all that? Hell no, you weren't going to escape that. It was just, I was just wondering how was it going to happen? Like, was he going to go out to a blaze of glory? Was he going to die? Because that would have been too predictable. This shit is worse than death. That shit was worse than death.
Yeah, again, he was the walking dead. He's dead man walking.
Literally. So that leads us into the spinoff that's going to happen, because they left little clues about where the series is going to go, or the spinoff. I guess the next series is going to focus on Wanda. And then when Leon was talking to Franklin about what was going on, like since he left, he said that Wanda is going to get into the music business. And that's all he really said. And I'm like, oh, okay, so we're going to be following, it's going to be some Death Row shit.
Yeah, they did a good job with their Easter eggs and overall hints throughout the series. Remember a couple seasons ago, there was a kid walking around with a camera that was supposed to be John Singleton. And then you end in the finale, it's them on the set of Boys in the Hood, which I knew exactly where it was from jump. I saw that 42 jersey and I was like, that's Ricky's little ass with that football. And then the shot that Franklin threw, which was, y'all ain't gonna win no Oscar, which is what John Singleton had always said. People would come by the set saying to him as he was filming. You have that, I forgot who the kid was a few seasons ago that started rapping the lifestyle about what they were doing.
Yeah.
That's something that's, if they move forward with the spinoff, that's definitely going to come into play. So they did a lot of good Easter eggs in terms of media and consumerism that they can definitely play with and do callbacks with going into that, if there is a spinoff that happens.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, that was a fitting end. That's how I look at it. For a Crab Jama, that was a fitting end.
Yeah, it was great. Shit. Boss. I have no problems with it. It sucks. Yeah,
don't worry about it. Yeah. I mean, that's life. Again, I mean,
the man chose his fate. So I'm not gonna be sad over. First of all, I ain't gonna be sad over no fictional character. But at the same time, when you see somebody choose their fate, it does suck to see. But at the same time, you just accept it. And the reality was he accepted his fate seasons ago.
Yeah, it kind of ended.
This is what happens. People are disappointed because their expectations are unrealistic, and that's when disappointment comes into play, is when you have unrealistic expectations. So for all these seasons, they kept watching this man go down and spiral downward. In terms of his want for possession and just overall greed. And then when you finally see it, it was like, well, what, like you were saying, what made you think it was going to be a happy ending? Even if it wasn't the happy ending, what made you think that it was going to be something that you anticipated if he allowed himself to be consumed with his greed?
Mm-hmm. Because he already went to prison. He already went to prison in the second season?
He already got shot.
And it's just like, like, where else was there to go? Like, if he died, that would have been too damn obvious. It would have been way too obvious.
He ain't had that liquor in his system.
Yeah, in his heart. You know? Yeah. So, man, that's a great series. I'm going to miss that show. Well, I'm kind of going to miss it, because the last season, it was walking that line. So,
that tiger.
Yeah.
Tiger style.
It even ended like a John Singleton movie. That's not the ending to it. It kind of ended like a John Singleton movie.
Yeah.
Shit, this could be part of his Hood trilogy, kind of, or his Hood, you know, his Hood movie saga or whatever.
No, it won't. This is something completely different.
Well, I know. But it ended like a John Singleton shit.
No, yeah, it ended in that fashion, but just because it ends in the fashion doesn't mean that you correlate it and put it with his film work. Those are films.
Yeah.
This was,
and it said I like the part where it said for John in the end.
Yeah.
And I was just like, damn. I hope if wherever he is, you know, God rest his soul, man. If he saw that ending, I hope I'm pretty sure he'd be satisfied with that ending.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know. So salute to them.
Absolutely. Now, somebody who ain't gonna get their shows missed, Frank Ocean.
Somebody did this.
Boy, I'm glad I was breathing again because I saw all of the powerful niggardry around this Coachella performance, and boy.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Yeah, Frank Ocean is... I've been saying for years that Frank Ocean, while a great artist, he definitely has his flaws. He does not deserve to be put up into that upper echelon. A great body of work so far, but he doesn't have that body of work that's just completely, you know, immortal.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't put anything out. So Frank Ocean was supposed to headline Coachella.
Because he was supposed to make up for 2020.
Right. And he had all these, as we come to find out, he had all these requests. He requested an ice skating rink in the middle of the damn desert.
They had Olympic gold medalists. They were going to skate around him or some shit like that.
Right.
It was going to be a very extravagant set.
Yeah, for an almost 2-hour set. I believe the set was supposed to be an hour 15, hour 30. What else took place? Okay, so then the day of, he then says, okay, I don't want this shit no more.
Literally hours before, yeah. Literally hours before.
And then when the crew is trying to figure out, okay, well, are you like, what can we do to fix this? He goes, well, if you don't fix this, then, you know, we're not going to do the live stream.
No, okay. He pretty much said.
So then they're fixing it, and then he's like, well, we're not live streaming this. We're not doing the live stream. So then he starts holding that over their heads.
Mm-hmm.
Then when he comes out, according to reports, he does different renditions of his songs, and they're like these rock versions of these R&B ballads.
I watched it because someone at Coachella, they went on Twitch and they were live streaming his performance. So I was watching the shit when I was kind of watching the shit on my phone when I was at work, and pretty much what you described, and that's what it was. Like, he was kind of halfway singing songs, lip syncing some songs. He would kind of pause and start going on long talks, saying like, yeah, you know, I've been working on this. There's no new album coming. Not saying there is an album coming, but, you know, and I was like, okay. Then, yeah, I know. And then he starts going on a whole, like, media, like a whole, what's it called? Media, not a media, like medley. Like he started playing, like a DJ started playing medleys of like club anthems of his songs and shit like that. And he saw a security guard shaking his ass, which was random. And then you couldn't really see him. You couldn't really see him on the stage because the way the screen looked, the way it was set up, like there was a big ass screen and you just couldn't see him, but you saw him on the screen. And I was just like, okay. And then the way the show was going, how he was performing, I'm like, yeah, he did y'all a favor not streaming this. It looked like he just didn't want to be there, to be honest. And then, literally, at around 12:30 or whatever, like after one of the songs, he goes on the mic and says, hey, everybody, hey, they're telling me there's curfew. That's the end of the show. Have a good night. And that was it.
What kind of shit is that?
Yeah, for everybody that said that Blonde was a great album, you deserve this. You deserve it.
Yeah, yeah. I still can't get into Blonde, man. Like, honestly, he's only had 4 albums, so he's had, well, I mean, 1 mixtape, 3 albums, Nostalgia Ultra, Channel Orange, Endless, and Blonde.
And Endless was a scam of an album, which I support. I still support the practice of scamming, but it was still a scam of an album.
And it still hasn't even been released properly. Like, you got to go on his website to even buy this shit. And honestly, Endless is better than Blonde, in my opinion. So, yeah. But I was just like, wow. And then meanwhile, on the other end of the stick, Weeknd came out during Metro Boomin's performance and shut that whole shit down.
Yeah, shout out to Metro Boomin.
Did you watch
Metro
that?
Boomin
did
you watch was, that set? Metro Boomin. Metro Boomin wasn't. No, I went back and kind of saw highlights of everything. Metro Boomin wasn't even on the main stage. He was on the side stage, and he had basically an ensemble. He had The Weeknd. He had Future. Mm-hmm. Everybody that was mm-hmm. on that album came out and did their thing for his performance.
I watched because they had the second weekend, so they had the second stream. So he streamed the second performance. Weeknd came out again. Literally, the way the transitions were, dog, it was an experience. Yeah, Weeknd come out, and then Future came out to do that song that did that new song that they dropped, and then Future came out, and dude, that boy, Future is the one. Like when he was on Coachella, when he did "I Just Fucked Your Bitch" on some Gucci flip flops, that whole everyone just jumped for their lives. That shit was wild to see. Then after that, Don Toliver came out, and then fucking Offset came out in the end, mm-hmm. and it was kind of weird to see because they were doing what were they doing? I think they did "Bad and Bougie," I think, and I was just like, ugh, that's kind of weird. But yeah, like Metro, he put on a show. Shout out to Metro.
Absolutely.
Also. Shout out to Bad Bunny. Man, I don't know what the fuck he was saying. He had that shit rocking. That was a show. He put on a show. And I'm like, look at this boy, Bad Bunny. Didn't speak English. He even asked, y'all want me to speak in English or speak in Spanish? Spanish! Oh,
yep. Well, you don't become one of the top grossing artists in the entire industry and give a bad show. That would be counterproductive to your yeah. legacy. So that's easy to understand.
The reason why I brought those two up is just like those are pop stars. Weeknd, Bad Bunny, and that could have been Frank Ocean.
Well, but you gotta be clear, that wasn't the Weeknd set. That was you gotta give that to Metro Boomin. I know,
Metro Boomin, but this is the second year that Weeknd has showed up. This is like Frank Ocean, this was his first performance in like 7 or 8 years or some shit like that, and he gave his fans that. Oof. I know his brother died and everything. He might have been grieving, but still.
Yeah, so now I got a question for that. Will festivals become more strict with headliners moving forward?
They need to. They better be. After what Frank Ocean did? See, I remember when Kanye dropped out, he gave them a week in advance so they could get someone else to headline. So this shit, yeah, they have to be stricter. They cannot let you sign the contract. You better do this shit because they have to be stricter on them.
I think these festivals are going to start moving like the NBA in terms of load management. Mm. So I think they're going to have it in writing that there's not going to be any adjustments to your performance 7 days prior. So a full week prior to the event. There's not going to be no, oh, I don't want this. I don't want that. Like, no, this is what it is. We're locked in now. So if you had any changes, you needed to notify us. In addition to that, I think they're going to now send a quality control specialist to sit in on the rehearsal.
That would make sense.
And I also believe that they're going to now have in the contracts, we're not doing this. I'm not going to stream bullshit. Either you're going to do this or you're not.
Yeah, and don't wait till the last minute and say I'm not going to go on if you stream my performance. No, it says on this contract that you're going to stream the show. So if you don't if you don't do this shit, we're cutting your shit and we're going to sue you because you signed on the contract.
Yeah, I do believe that there's going to be some arrangements and some clauses that go into that because you have certain artists that have streaming licensing and rights to other entities. So I believe that if they can't work a deal out where, you know, they pay to have it streamed, I believe that those will be honored. But in terms of just coming up and showing up and saying, well, I don't want to stream, that's not going to happen. I also believe they're probably going to start working into effect, unless it's an emergency, you have 2 weeks to let us know that you're going to be bowing out. So that way we have one full week to go and find a replacement act and have the rehearsal set in. So I believe it's going to be a situation where you're going to see 2 weeks from the event. That's going to be the final time unless it's, you know, some a Travis Scott or a family emergency type situation. You have 2 weeks to drop out. Once you confirmed, you have 1 week to allow us to sit in on the rehearsal and confirm this is what it's going to be. And once you have it set up, a week prior to that, there are no changes.
Mm-hmm. They said they lost millions off Frank Ocean, like leaving, like not showing up for the second weekend and shit like that. What's even worse about that shit is that his people have the nerve to come out and say that Frank Ocean fucking fucked up his ankle before a day before the fucking show. And I'm like, you weren't doing shit, bruh.
Oh no.
And then they showed. And then there's footage of him, dude. There's footage of him walking into his car after the incident, after the show was over, like casually just walking. And I'm like, bro.
I just saw John Morant damn near break his hand and come back and put 25 in the fucking fourth quarter alone. No, I'm not.
Fuck out of here, Frank.
You ain't in the playoffs. Nah, you ain't rocking in the playoffs like that.
I just didn't like how that's how you treat your fans, bro. Like that's how you literally treat your fans after being gone for that long. Like you literally said, people came from all around the world. They paid good money to see you, and you just said you gave them a half-ass performance and then left.
Yeah.
That's some whole shit, man.
That's nasty work. That's
nasty work, bro. Like, shit, at least Kanye's an asshole. But at least he gave him a week in advance. He gave them a week notice, no saying he wasn't going to show up. Shit, man. That's just some asshole shit. Other than
that says a lot. That says a lot because, you know, Kanye hates niggas more than a Nazi.
Literally. But, oh, yeah.
Powerful niggardry at work, him.
Nah, but just looking back with y'all, I saw some of the sets. Like, I saw who else was there. Lotto was up there. She put on a great set. Pusha T had on a great set. What's his Labyrinth? Oh, yeah. Labyrinth showed up, and he brought out Zendaya this past weekend. That was pretty dope to perform her songs from Euphoria. I guess that was her first performance in, like, decades. So that was pretty dope. And who else? Blink-182 ended up headlining, and I'm like, wow, these niggas still around. Oh, shit. Dude, that nigga Travis Barker is like 47 years old. He does not look 47.
Yeah. I mean, that's he even got his own new show on Hulu with
not Chloe, Kendall, right?
Or Courtney. No, not Kendall. Courtney.
What's her? Yeah, Courtney. There you go. Oh, shit. They all look the same.
No, is it Courtney? Yeah, Courtney.
Yeah. I mean, shit, they all look the damn same. Shit.
No, they don't.
But
you say that a lot about people that don't sound and don't look alike. you say that a lot about people that do not sound alike and don't look alike at all. So that now it makes me even question your judgment in terms of were we watching the same show, nigga? I don't know. Were we?
Well, we were both sad in the end. So yeah, shit, man. But anyway, that's Coachella. So now
music did drop. I was able to when I beat COVID and I survived. And I was able to come too. I was able to listen to three projects. I only gave them one spin because, again, I was surviving and I smothered.
I was surviving.
Yeah. Surviving COVID. But I listened to Ray Shremmert, Shrem for Life. And I was like, wait, the Shrems, they're back? I didn't even know they were back. I didn't even know they dropped a single.
That was a quiet ass release.
Yeah. And again, I'm just giving one listen. One listen reviews, so this can easily change over time. But I listened to this when I was putting baby furniture together yesterday, and I really liked it. It was pretty damn good. One song that stood out to me, I don't know why it stood out. It was towards the end of the album. It was Torpedo. Great hook, great beat. I was rocking with it. Not So Bad, Lean's Gone Cold was another good joint. Like I thought this was a really good project. I was very surprised that it came out with no hype around it, no promotion or anything like that. They got two lone features on here, Young Thug and Future on two separate songs. I just thought it was a good project put together. I was very surprised that it came with no promotion considering who they are. But it's good music to end the spring and start getting ready for summer. I'll tell you that much. You know where they stand when it comes to that, and they produced another one. Next album I listened to was For Motivational Use Only, Volume 1, the Currency and Jermaine Dupri collaboration.
That shit knocked. I like that shit.
Oh man, it was talk about smooth bounce. Smooth bounce. This one was released on both Jet Life and So So Def. This was great. I liked it. Never Enough is a dope track. There's two features on here with 2 Chainz and T.I. on separate records. That 2 Chainz record off the lot. That was a great. I need that for the summer.
That T.I. feature is fucking fire too. Because T.I. reminding people, I can still do this if I want to. So that was a dope listen.
Yeah, that was a really good collab album. Just for the simple fact that it's. It's Spitta with his signature rhyming scheme and sound. mixed with Jermaine Dupri and JD's his eloquence for bounce.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that was something where I was like, "Whoa, that when's Volume 2 coming? That could that come during the summertime? Because I need that ASAP.
I need that facts.
I need that facts." And then the final project I listened to while I was surviving COVID was Mozzie the Collect Call EP.
That was great too. It's setting up for Mozzie's release. I guess he comes out. I think he probably comes out like probably next month or in June. I know it's
at some point during the summer. I know he's coming back.
Go on.
This was something nice, a nice little six pack to hold people over, especially with coming off of Survivor's Guilt, which I was one of my top 10 rap albums last year. There was really nothing. I'm telling you, Mozzie is that select artist. When he speaks, I believe everything he says. Mm-hmm. It's authentic. He doesn't try to sell himself as something he's not. Everything is what he, you know, you hear the pain and survivor in him. It's just his pure authenticity. It's no different from here. Yeah, no different from here. Hole in My Heart with E. Mozzie and Sully Rue, of course, the Gangland Squadron. Man. Like it's Mozzie. I ain't got no problems with a Mozzie project.
Shout out to his label for like literally milking this, because I noticed like back in January I started hearing Mozzie features just randomly start popping up, and I'm going like, oh. And I think in March you started seeing a lot more, and now they dropped the EP. Yeah, Empire, they got this rollout ready.
Remember, he's not just Empire. He's CMG.
Yeah, CMG too. I forgot about that. Yeah, he's CMG.
Yeah, no, he's CMG. Remember, he's not on Empire anymore. This is a CMG Interscope release. This is Yo Gotti and them throwing him in, I don't want to use that as a derogatory term, but they know he's on the way back out, so they're creeping. They obviously have backed Glorilla, and rightfully so. They got her set up, but in the meantime, they know he's on his way back, so they're planting all the seeds for that too. Yeah, now this is Yo Gotti.
And if we could stay, I guess, in the Bay Area ish. So this nigga Jay Diggs dropped in a record called Three Fingers Whack, or Whack Three Fingers. And it's pretty much, it's a diss record to Whack 100, because I guess they have some Clubhouse beef or some shit like that. And I think Martin sent it to me, and I'm like, wait a minute. I was like, wait, what? So then I remember I listened to the halfway. I'm like, because you know me, I don't like giving Whack any type of energy. Like, dude, why are you giving this so much energy? But then when the song kept going, and then at the halfway point, I was listening to the hook, and I was like, yo, this low-key slaps. And then later on that night, I went out, and I think I went somewhere. I forgot where I was. I was going to a bar, and a car came right past me, and I heard, hey, fuck Whack 100. I was like, wait, what? I'm blasting this shit.
I mean, it's the Bay, man. Niggas love Diggs out here.
Yeah, man. That shit was hilarious. Shit. But another album I listened to, I've been listening to, it came out in March, was his name is Dindy. I thought you said his name? Dindy.
I need to go back and listen. I think it's Dende, but it might
Dende. Be. There you go. You're right. It's Dende. And he dropped an album called 95 Civic. And that came out, it came out in March. And I remember I listened to it a few times, and there was a few songs I really fucked with. But then for whatever reason, I decided to really go back and listen to it. This shit is really fucking good. It pretty much
it's extravagant. I found him on, I wouldn't even say on accident. I was just scrolling through on Twitter, and I don't know if it was his Tiny Desk or it was a live performance, but he looked beat up, and I was like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was singing Nightmares, which I
just looked beat up, and I was like, wait, what's this? So then I went and pretty much read up the synopsis of the album, and I was like, oh yeah, let me play this real quick. And I don't want to say surprisingly, this was actually a couple weeks before I caught the symptoms. So I was, you know, I listened to it, and I didn't really have much time to talk about it because, you know, I was doing my own thing, and then I got sick. But
yeah,
he's an artist from Houston. His sound is very R&B and gospel. It's like a blend of those two. And what I read about this album was he tells the story of the breakup with his fiance, and he does it using the metaphor of a car accident.
So that's what this project is about.
So both him and his ex-fiance, they were born in 1995, and she used to drive a Honda Civic. So he centered that around there. He dropped an EP before called Before the Crash.
Yeah.
And so, like you were saying, Nightmares was how I was introduced to him when he did that live. Swerve, an excellent track. Wish You Well. I forgot who's featured on that record. But Blimey. it interplodes Adele's Rolling in the Deep. That was a great project.
Yeah, Block Me too. That's a good ass record too. But yeah, that record and pretty much everything that you just listed, that's pretty much what I listened to for a bit. But yeah, been kind of slow. But I just have this feeling by the time we leave, I have a feeling more heavyweights are going to start dropping music soon.
I don't think it was slow. I think what happened, I know for me, I was out of it because I didn't get to these records until over this weekend. They had been out for almost 2 weeks. So I know in my instance, I don't think it's been slow. I've been out the loop trying to survive.
Yeah, true that.
Now in terms of AI, before we get to that, just round of applause to everybody who released projects that I enjoyed all four of those projects. I had no issues with them. I thought they served a purpose for what they did. This whole AI situation is now about to take another turn because we have labels and artists now speaking out. They want copyright infringements on, which I believe is correct in terms of don't put out a record saying this is Drake and Weeknd and then put it up on the DSPs.
That was nasty. And they said they got over 500,000 listens or even more than that.
Right. I listened to the record, but I listened to it on Twitter. And I was like, hey, this is actually not one of them bad AI joints. Like, this is actually pretty good. But at the same time, I was not going to go to a DSP and give it up that way. I wasn't about to do that.
And they had another one. They had another Drake record. I think it was called Coldest Winter or some shit like that. And it literally sounded like something Drake would make. And I was just like, whoa. Like, if I was Drake, I think it's time to fucking switch shit up. Because it was literally too easy. And I was just like, oh, okay. And I'm hearing them. They putting Rihanna's vocals over 10 records.
Oh, that was amazing. That was an incredible record.
Having Rihanna sing over that, I was like, oh my God, this literally sounds like a Rihanna record.
See, that's the case where I would support this. If you're using this this technology as a songwriter to say, I wrote you a song. This is what I envision it sounding like with you on the song, and these get used as reference joints. So that way, you know, because it's one thing to be a songwriter, you get either yourself or, you know, somebody to use for the reference track. That's one thing because then you're like, okay, for the artist that you're pitching it to, okay, I can see it. Let's see what we can do. Now you're using the technology where it's like, oh, this is what I potentially sound like already. Like, okay, dope. Let's do it. Or in some cases, I'm not really feeling it, you know, so be it. But at least if you use this technology for reference tracks and demos, that's where it's like, okay, we got something we cooking here. But when you're just going out and trying to use this technology for this purpose of selling a record in this realm, and then I also want to up it by one. Somebody brought up a good point. They said, well, this is how you start manufacturing beef. You start saying one rapper saying this about the other rapper, and then now you're making a record, and they look at each other like, "What? I didn't write that." Because you already got people with ill intentions and ill minds who go on social media trying to instigate shit. Now you're coming back with a record that's completely AI, but you're pitching and selling it as, "Oh yeah, this is the diss record," and you know niggas don't be fact checking, so you have to deal with that.
And it's getting better. Like, it's some Black Mirror shit, man. Because I remember back in 2010 when Sony got cute and decided to release that Michael Jackson album, that post-Thomas Michael Jackson album with fake-ass Michael Jackson vocals. They called someone in there to, like, sing other Michael Jackson records and presented it as a Michael Jackson record. They just needed to wait another decade. Because now they can do that. They can literally do that now if they want to. But, you know, with Michael's voice, nah, that's hard to do. Because they tried to do that for a weekend, and I'm like, nah, you still didn't get his voice right. But
yeah, no, I'm very curious. Somebody brought up a good point that don't be surprised when you start seeing podcasters do this to try to get an extra couple episodes a week.
Oh God, this is spooky shit, man. We should have never gave you niggas computers.
Yeah, no. Again, when you put it in the right hands and you use it for, you know, some good intentions, you're gonna get a good product. But when you put it in the hands of, hey, I want to hear Drake do the story of Adidon, then it's like, okay, what are we doing? Like,
all right, Jay-Z rapping Ether, that shit was funny.
Yeah, like, I mean, okay, this is like, it's funny, but it's like, you know, you putting it in the hands of niggas who don't want to push the envelope and push it forward. You're just doing dumb shit with it. Like, yeah. I always look back to Twitter and Disney saying, we not buying this because it's too nasty. And could you imagine Twitter under Disney? They would have took it to the next round, but it was because motherfuckers was doing...
they were doing too much. Bob Iger said, I'm cool.
I showed Britt the meme of former mayor Lori Littlefoot when she was trying to get people vaxxed and she put that money on the ground and somebody retweaked it, edited it, and put the money on the ground and said, do it, be squirting. Oh, and she just looks, she goes, Jay, you're disgusting.
Nah, this morning before we recorded, dog, someone put it up, an AI version of Munch, but it's Michael Jackson singing Munch, like the Ice Spice song, and they had the Thriller shit with Michael with Ice Spice's hair.
Oh God,
should have never gave you niggas computers.
Yeah, no, oh never, man, never should. And,
to mention this real quick before we move on, I guess Elon Musk took away everyone's blue check marks, you know, who he didn't want to pay. And then a day later, or a few days later, he gave back everybody. He gave everybody blue check marks with over 1 million followers. He gave it right back to them.
Yep. Yeah, go figure that one.
Yeah. Blue sky.
I just think it's funny that now I have to go in and I gotta double check to make sure it's the real Wiz Khalifa that's saying what he's saying. So I don't get it because as we, speaking of Ice Spice, I thought it was funny how they said The Boy's a Liar Part 2 should have been the official theme song for the NBA playoffs, which is going to take us right into basketball talk because it sounds like Pink, what the hell's her name? Pink Powers?
Pink Panthers? Yeah.
Pink Panthers. Now she's singing The Boy's a Liar, but it sounds like The Boy's a Layup. And so now you just see all the, I don't know if you've seen the video of the hype video of all the guys in their highlight tapes, but you just see like Jason Tatum going up for a mean dunk and you just hear The Boy's a Layup. The
Boy's a Layup. Boy's a layup. Thought I was feeling you.
Yeah. But yeah, now we hear from my talk.
Been waiting, baby.
We hear from my talk, man. NBA play-in and playoffs. Like I said, I was trying to get us on that Monday going into the play-in, so always we get predictions, but it just didn't work out that way, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I went on Twitter and I put my predictions up anyways. So far, I've been right. I am right. I'm right with all this shit. Kings and Warriors, I said it's going to be the series.
Oh yeah, it is. They're literally like Agent Smith and Neo out there, man.
Yeah. The Kings are basically a startup of what the Warriors used to be when they first came up. Everybody kept writing off the Kings, and I'm like, they ain't a three seed for no reason. I watched them a good amount of times throughout the season, and even though they only had, I think, one at most nationally televised game, I was like, that's what we got league pass for, and I watched them. And unfortunately, they was giving it to the Lakers, so I watched them in those games too. But the Kings are they just move fast. They're a fast moving team.
They are,
and De'Aaron Fox is him. He's coming.
He has
arrived. And you know, putting him up with the Warriors, we got a lot in those first two games with the Kings taking those first two, and the Warriors holding home serve, so it's now tied 2-2. But those first two games, boy, you had E-40 ejected out of game one off of some bullshit, as far as I'm concerned. And then you had Draymond
stopping
ejected out of game two, which I thought, oh, that's Draymond being Draymond. And then you had game four, which was, man, basically an NBA instant classic. We thought Steph was going to pull a Chris Webber and blow it all, which would have set the world, the whole NBA world on fire.
Oh, man.
But they passed it out to Harrison Barnes, and people were quickly reminded why the Warriors had no problem trading Harrison Barnes so they could acquire Kevin Durant.
You should have saw. No, and then when Draymond fucking dapped up Steph, he's like, yeah, we've seen this movie before.
Yeah.
Or Jason had the best tweet because he said he was at the airport. He said as soon as the ball left Harrison Barnes' hand, everybody said, brick.
Yep. Yep.
Oh shit, man!
I knew that series was going to be the one, and it's lived up to all the hype. Celtics over the Hawks, Knicks over the Cavs, Nuggets over the Wolves, and Suns over the Clippers. Those are all 3-1 as we were speaking.
Now your Lakers.
The only one out of those I didn't really see being that. I thought Knicks and Cavs was going to go 7. That's really the only one where I was like, oh.
It can still go 7.
That's not going 7 at all.
You never know.
That's not going 7. There's you're not familiar with some of these teams and the narratives that have gone around. Donovan Mitchell has looked like shit.
Oh, shit. You see, you're the second person to tell me that. My homegirl told me that. Now you're telling me that. God damn.
Donovan Mitchell hit like 8 field goals or something like that over this entire weekend in New York.
Well, god damn.
He's looked horrible. And the Knicks are actually looking very wise for passing up on that trade because the ball's become very stagnant. Aside from the Cavs in that third quarter in game 4, the ball's really stagnant and their two bigs aren't really bigging. So yeah, I have the Cavs might win game 5, but I have no. I think that one's over in 6 at most. Nuggets I picked in 5, so that's pretty much on brand. Suns and Clippers, I picked the Suns I think in 6, but yeah, we didn't really anticipate and probably should have anticipated Kawhi coming in for a few games and then disappearing.
That's the
legacy of the Clippers. The Clippers are just so focused on trying to beat out the Lakers that they just don't recognize that there's a whole other league besides the Lakers. Legitimately, like that's what it became. They won game 1, and ever since then it just hasn't looked good. And the one person that's pretty much held the Clippers in this entire time has been none other than Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, they're going out. I'll give them this: the Clippers are going out fighting. They are going out fighting. They're like the Lions. They go out fighting.
Yes.
So,
but the Suns have Kevin Durant, and they also have Devin Booker.
And Chris Paul.
Surprisingly, they got Chris Paul. Chris Paul was like, yeah, fuck y'all. Game 3 is mine. So those are all there. Lakers and the Heat have opportunities to go up 3-1 this evening because we're recording in the morning. The Heat are up 2-1. I'm not going to say that they're up by that because of Giannis being out. They definitely had the potential before, but I will say Giannis being out with the back contusion that he suffered in game 1 definitely has a part to play in that. Lakers, they had me excited in game 1. They pissed me off in game 2. Then I was very indifferent in game 3 because it's just like they don't have this pedigree to act like they're superior then and they can start doing side missions, but they do it. And then they end up getting in trouble as a result. Game 1, Austin Reeves was telling the world, I'm him, and Lakers fans was looking at y'all like, we've been telling y'all that he was him. Y'all kept telling us that we were overhyping him. I don't know why that was. Man was putting up 35 points every other game, so now
he's your little mini Brock Purdy. He's your mini Brock Purdy.
That's not mini Brock Purdy, my nigga. That's Hillbilly Kobe. We had that nickname from last season. We kept telling people about Austin Reeves. Nobody was trying to hear us, and okay. It's not a Brock Purdy because Austin Reeves didn't just come out this year. He was doing it last year.
Oh, he was doing it last year. Okay.
He hit a game-winning three-pointer against the Mavericks last year. You saw it. When he hit it in Dallas. That was him.
I remember that. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That motherfucker was going like, I'm him. Like, I was like, okay.
We know. We've been telling you. Like, he's that nigga. Then game 2 came around. John Morant almost broke his hand, and so he was out game 2. And what do the Lakers do? They come out like fucking zombies.
Shit the bed.
Yeah. So again, that's the experience of being a Lakers fan, where you think they're about to take to the next level, and then they just fall back and they don't do shit. Dylan Brooks went out and, you know, basically talked his talk, which I wasn't upset about. Talk your talk. That's what you're supposed to do. You're trying to hype yourself up as a heel. But then when he shows up and And it's not even about him shitting the bed in game three. It's when he then runs away from the smoke. And it's like, you ain't no real villain, dog. Like, you can shit the bed all you want. You can shit the bed all you want, but at least go to the microphone and be the villain. He didn't even do that.
Didn't even do that. Didn't even just like he didn't go, I got nothing to say. Didn't even go to the podium. Like, at least Draymond would have did that shit. But shit, like, he didn't even do that. And then, and then his comeback interview, he was all going like, oh, you know, the media just making me out to be a villain and they're making drama out of nothing. Like, nigga, what? You started this.
You wanted that.
Yeah.
And then, so game three occurs. Lakers are mud stomping their ass out, which was, you know, I didn't expect that, but I expect them to come with some more energy. But then you notice they started playing into that Dylan Brooks narrative and they started making sure LeBron was attacking, going at Dylan Brooks. And it just, it allowed the Grizzlies not only come back, but in that fourth quarter, Ja put up like 23 or 25 points in the fourth quarter alone. Now he got rhythm going into game four, and it's like they ended the first quarter up by 26 and they won by 10, and they didn't get a chance to sit their starters. You know, they just keep playing with the food, and it's like, at what point do you guys realize you don't have this pedigree to focus on side missions? Accomplish the main goal first, then you can start doing that, but you guys haven't done anything as a unit together. So we'll see how that takes place. Sixers are the only ones where they like, yeah, fuck this shit, we out of here. They went and swept the Nets 4-0. There was some beef and some funk in game three. Was it Joel Embiid kicked homeboy so hard that he fucked up his knee, so he missed game four. James Harden got ejected. There was a lot of stuff going on, but the Sixers, they held that down, and they're the first team that's officially in the second round. So we're going to see all these games play out over the next few days, but the first round of basketball and the play-in this year have been some of the best basketball I've seen postseason in a long time.
It really was.
As a collective, there's been great games throughout the past few years, but as a collective, up and down, all rounds and all series, this has been amazing basketball.
Yeah, it really has been. Even it's entertaining for me, too. The play-in is the best thing that Joe – what's his name? Who's the commissioner?
Adam Silver.
Adam Silver, I call him Joe Silver. That was the best thing Adam Silver ever came up with, is the play-in. That the play-in tournament. That's the best thing he ever came up with. Should have came up with that years ago. Yeah. That shit. That's great TV, man. Shit. So yeah, it's pretty much like the wild card positioning. Fucking love it. Playoffs.
That's a good way to put it. It's the wild card.
Pretty much that's what it is. It's wild card weekend. So,
a week.
I don't know why I said weekend. I keep thinking NFL. Have you watched the XFL? Try to watch any glimpse of it?
No.
Yeah. I just know their playoffs start this weekend. And I'm like, damn, that sucks for y'all because I'm watching basketball playoffs.
Everyone's watching the NBA right now, man. It's like, no one's watching the XFL.
I genuinely don't know why the XFL and the USFL are not leagues that happen in the summertime. I don't get it.
Not during the spring, man. You got to let basketball breathe. No one's really thinking about football right now.
Right, because it's not just the NBA. You got both tournaments in college. You got the men's and the women's. And the women's just had a renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I don't mind the XFL and the USFL, but do that shit in the summertime.
Yeah, that leads right into fucking training camp and shit.
Right.
But, you know, what can you do?
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else you want to mention when it comes to like NBA.
I covered it all.
Yeah. Good timing. Yeah, pretty much we covered everything. Snowfall. We might see Franklin somewhere on the street. Not around me. What if it is
around me? Man, that happened in 1990. You think he made it the full 33 years? You must be out your damn mind.
No, it was just a 50 Cent joke. Around me, around the corner. Not around me. Shit. Oh, yeah, shout out. Around the corner, around the block, not around me. Power is still powering. The show just keeps getting better, man.
We'll dive into that next episode.
I know. I'm just mentioning it. We're still watching this shit. Fucking love it. Anyway, on that note, this is episode 294. Right?
Yes, sir.
Episode 294, the most sort of consistent podcast in the area. You can always Follow us on Twitter. Shout out to Mr. Fab. You can follow me at Mr. Busby, for lowercase 08. You can follow us on Twitter at TheologicalSP. You can always follow us on Instagram at TheologicalSense. And, of course, on that Facebook.
And on all social media, you can find me at JC No Hunnits. Hunnits! Again, I'm tweeting, talking basketball, whatnot. But I really think this might be the final episode before I officially become a father. So leave me alone, because I ain't gonna be getting no sleep.
If anybody's listening to this podcast right now, send me that Blue Sky invite. If y'all don't know what Blue Sky is, it's pretty much the new Twitter.
You don't want that. You don't want that.
Why?
They already said when if you go up with that the code that isn't the official code that you get. When they update the servers, you're screwed.
Okay. Well,
yeah, you don't want that.
Either way,
just wait it out. Twitter ain't dead yet.
They said that wait list is at 1.5 million. So there's going to be a whole migration to that app when that shit opens up for everybody.
Yeah, but the problem isn't the migration. It's who's going to stay there. So
it's good. True.
Many competitors came out from McDonald's. McDonald's still selling over a billion cheeseburgers. So, you know.
True that. But on that note, we out this bitch.
Yes, sir.
Peace.
Peace.